Daybreak on BizNews is proudly brought to you by Bonitas, the medical aid for South Africa.
Good morning and welcome to the BizNews Daybreak. Today is Wednesday, the 1st of July. I'm Kerry Lanigan. First up, we've got the latest overnight news from our partners at Bloomberg.
Anthropic has received notice from the Commerce Department that export controls have been lifted for its Claude Fable 5 and Mythos 5 AI models. Tonight, in a post on X, Anthropic said it will begin restoring access tomorrow, and it will share an update soon. Earlier this month, the government imposed an export control requiring Anthropic to obtain U.S. permission before allowing any foreign national, regardless of location, to access those two models, and before they could be sent to any destination worldwide. President Trump reported earning at least $1.4 billion in 2025 from crypto and meme coin-related businesses. The president's annual financial disclosure also shows a pledged asset line of over $50 million from Charles Schwab. Here is Bloomberg's Derek Wallbank.
Presidents, when they get into office, they make somewhere around $400,000 a year as like a salary from the United States government. You know, there are things that they have to pay for and all of that. A usual side hustle that you would be talking about for presidents has been writing maybe books that can bring in, a couple of low million dollars. So this is by orders of magnitude more compensation.
That is Bloomberg's Derek Wallbank. President Trump has reportedly weighed a return to all-out war with Iran. The Wall Street Journal reports Trump has held conversations with both Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff Dan Kane about the U.S. resuming full strikes. The Journal says Trump believes another round of military action could derail diplomacy. And at the same time, the Journal reports Trump is fine if negotiations with Tehran blow past the August 18th deadline for a nuclear deal. The stock market advanced on the final day of the second quarter. We had the S&P rising 0.8%. And over the last 3 months, the benchmark posted its best quarterly performance in 6 years with a gain of nearly 15%. The chip makers extended gains today as the Philadelphia Semiconductor Index rose 3.9%. And for the entire quarter, the SOX rallied 88% for its best quarter ever. Here is Dan Suzuki, Global Investment Strategist at iCapital.
If you look at where we are today, it's hard to argue that things aren't phenomenal, right? I mean, we have the best earnings growth since 2021. You're seeing all these different indicators, like retail sales are double digit, employment starting to come back, PMIs are doing really well. So growth is obviously really good, and that's kind of what's been powering the market higher.
Dan Suzuki of iCapital speaking earlier to Bloomberg. After the bell, Nike reported better than expected earnings for the latest quarter. EPS 72 cents, far exceeding expectations due to expected tariff-related refunds. Sales for the second quarter also topped forecast at $11 billion. Now, the results for Greater China were weak, although in line with expectations, and weakness persisted at the Converse brand. And at the same time, Nike said efforts to sell its products for full price remained challenged. Here is Bloomberg analyst Poonam Goyal.
Competition is increasing. There are definitely more players in the market, and no one is willing to leave their share behind for Nike to easily pick it up. So innovation is going to be key here. Nike needs to continue to innovate, but even at a faster clip to keep up or beat competition, because the mind share is now split between the newer emerging brands like On and others.
That is Bloomberg analyst Poonam Goyal. Shares in Nike were down by more than 5% in late U.S. trading.
Freedom Front Plus leader Corné Mulder lays out where his party stands on values versus the DA ahead of this year's local government elections. Check out biznews.com for more.
When I became leader of the party in also by coincidence February, on the 22nd of February last year, I made it very clear that I think one must evaluate the South African population, and then evaluation indicates that approximately 80% of our population, and that's from all sectors of society, from all communities, are basically people that sees themselves as conservative, that sees themselves that they feel very strongly about traditional family values, and they say they are Christians. And all I said was, it's important. I think it's not rocket science that the Freedom Front Plus should position ourselves next to what is important and what burns in the hearts and the minds of those South African citizens. And that's exactly why, in terms of this election, we say it's our time. And if I speak about our time, our includes all of this South Africans. And with that goes a certain set of values. And I think being a party that sees ourselves as center-right, in contrary to the Democratic Alliance, which I would say is center-left, that brings us to very important values. Values like free market party, driven by free market, the whole free market idea. A Christian Democratic Party. Values such as limited government, private and guaranteed property rights, federalism, decentralization, recognition of diversity as a positive and strong building block in South Africa, merit, equal opportunities, traditional family values, Judeo-Christian values, zero tolerance for crimes, patriotism, and I can go on. These are the kinds that I believe are trusted values internationally and that has proven to be successful and make countries successful in terms of economic growth, job creation, etc. And I think that contrasts us to a very large extent to where the Democratic Alliance positions itself. And it was interesting in this interview that Mr. Steenhuisen did, and I say again, he was the leader of the party until 2 months ago. I have not heard any utterances from the new leadership that they are now moving or shifting their direction or their course towards a more center-right positioning and expressing their support for these kind of values. I've made the point, you can go and ask the citizens of Cape Town. When Jordan Lewis came with their budget, which had huge implications and people had to take that to court, he made the point to say, well, 60% of Cape Townians won't pay 1 cent more. I understand that. But the problem is the other 40% says we are sick and tired and irritated of subsidizing 60% of the inhabitants of Cape Town to our detriment and just having to pay out. And that kind of socialist kind of things are slowly creeping into the Democratic Alliance, as far as I'm concerned, being a central left political party. I think the important point that Mr. Steenhuisen made, and I must give him credit for the honesty, is to say the Democratic Alliance cannot afford to ponder towards the AfriForum solidarity kind of grouping. But he went further. He referred to Afrikaners in general. And by doing that, basically, he's referring to, as far as I'm concerned, to a very large segment of our population that are basically supporting Judeo-Christian principles, that see themselves as conservative, etc., and would like to see South Africa grow in terms of those proven kind of values. And then he made the point that the DA should exactly position themselves somewhere else. And he referred to the liberal tradition of the Democratic Alliance, where they came from. And it's common cause. The Democratic Alliance, I think, believes in individual rights, and they believe that that is sufficient in terms of protection for whatever challenges there may be in South Africa. But it's a little bit of a tragedy to look at where things started off a year and a half ago, 18 months ago, until where it completely unraveled at this point, where there seems to be a squabble within a Democratic Alliance. And as I've said, I'm not going to go there and make any contribution in that regard. It's not my problem. It's not my fault. But I'm going ahead in terms of positioning the Freedom Front Plus in terms of what I believe would be the correct positioning.
Political commentator Solly Moeng joins Chris Steyn to unpack a turbulent week. The national shutdown, unrest in Yeovil, and the fallout from John Steenhuisen's explosive allegations. The full interview is on biznews.com.
Chris, I'm getting calls from friends from overseas. People are watching this country. They're like, Solly, what is going on in your country? It's almost like we have institutions that are reaching a stress point. It's like security issues, governance issues, immigration issues, everything all lumped in together. And these investigations into crime, killings, and then the political parties doing their own thing, you know, either positioning themselves for the elections coming up or the DA, this whole Steenhuisen thing. It's unstoppable.
Unstoppable. It certainly seems like it. Sorry, first the national shutdown. Today was the deadline, is the deadline, from anti-immigrant groups for undocumented foreigners to leave South Africa. There's been some violence in Johannesburg, in Yeovil, where marchers and residents threw stones at each other. But otherwise, it has been relatively peaceful.
Yeah, it's a good thing. Look, there have been very, very strong calls for it, for there to be no violence. And it's a good thing that even the leader, the lady Ngobese Zuma, was also quoted as saying, we don't want violence. Government has made it clear there shouldn't be violence. Of course, the government takes responsibility for this. We can still talk about that. But it's a good thing that the strong call for no violence has been largely heeded. Of course, there have been some unfortunate deaths leading to this thing. What really surprises me, Chris, is a number of foreign nationals who, I don't know, some people have documents that they decided it's not safe, they're going to leave anyway. But then the sheer number of people who suddenly emerged, Malawians in KZN, in Western Cape, in Johannesburg, Eastern Cape, people who are just quietly living their lives in South Africa. I mean, so what do we get out of it? Of course we want legality. We want everybody to be here legal. I think that everybody who is in South Africa, South African or not, must have some form of documentation that says who they are. There's no doubt about that. I hope that, you know, people who deserve to be here will be here, but they cannot be here illegally. We don't know where it's going to land in the end. It's just one day of making a statement. The statement has been clear. The whole world is watching this statement. But we also have at some point to talk about the ramifications for Africa, for South Africa. Many people in Africa, in the rest of Africa, are very angry at us. I've seen a video, I hope it's also isolated, of Nigerians attacking two South African black women in the streets in revenge to what's been happening. What is reported to have been happening to their own people. There's a lot of anger. I would have friends from Benin, from Kenya, who are like worried about what's going on. It's a difficult thing. It's very layered. I don't think that doing nothing about it is the way to go, but also how we handle it will leave a mark on South Africa's image. There's no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm. It's now just after 3 o'clock in the afternoon, so let us hope there is no further violence today, Sonny.
Yeah, let's hope so. Let's hope that, you know, there will be reason. I think they've made their message clear. It's out there. But it doesn't mean that every single foreigner is going to leave South Africa. But I think the government then must come in to say, okay, South Africans, we've heard you. Even if it's just reactionary, right? To say, well, this is what we're going to start working towards.
Healthcare matters, but what matters most?
Having cover for the people who keep this business going.
Bonitas is there for you when it counts. Bonitas, medical aid for South Africa. Visit bonitas.co.za and find your plan.
On the latest BizNews Edge show, Tony Leon fires back at Steenhuisen's claims that his firm was pulling strings behind the scenes at the DA. You can watch the BizNews Edge on biznews.com or BizNews TV on YouTube.
Well, from one credibility test to another, Tony Leon, former DA leader, now executive chairman of Resolve Communications, has gone on the offensive against the very party he used to run, or at the very least, one of his successors, the ex-leader, John Steenhuisen. It follows allegations from Steenhuisen, the DA's immediate former leader, who only left 2 months ago, who was recently, stripped of his agriculture portfolio after the foot and mouth disease catastrophe was mishandled on his watch. Steenhuisen said there was a deal that he would step down as leader as long as he could carry on as the Minister of Agriculture. Strange what happens in back rooms in politics. His defense, delivered in a News 24 interview, was to blame external enemies. He named Leon directly and suggested Resolve has been pulling the strings behind the scenes. Tony Leon's response was direct. He says, not one document, not one unlawful act has been produced to support the claims that Steenhuisen has made. That one accuser, in Leon's words, simply put two and two together and came up with his own conclusions. Tony Leon has drawn a hard line between lobbying and state capture, and he's not ruling out legal action if the allegations from Steenhuisen cross into defamation. My view on this, when a serious allegation comes wrapped in zero evidence, it's not a scandal, that's a smokescreen. But smokescreens still do damage. And this one is now actively destabilizing a coalition partner inside the Government of National Unity.
And finally, Wedbush's Dan Ives tells Bloomberg why he expects big tech to come back strong in the second half of the year.
Dan Ives of Wedbush writing, tech stocks have way oversold in June. They ultimately represent major buying opportunities as these bearish narratives have overshadowed the future massive growth prospects. Dan joins us now. And of course, when we're talking about tech, we're talking about hyperscalers in particular, which have been the huge losers until yesterday, where you actually saw a little bit of a turnaround. Why do you reject the notion that people are pushing back against the spending plans of some of these tech behemoths?
Look, the hyperscalers are $700 billion. I mean, that's what's funding the AI revolution. I mean, when you talk about memory chips, NVIDIA, and everything else, but that's just the first phase. Because what the hyperscalers are doing is, this is the build-out. It's Vegas Strip building in 1955. But ultimately, the monetization now is going to come. I mean, when you look at Meta, they're not just spending to spend. You look at Microsoft, they essentially own the enterprise. Alphabet, 5% of their customers have gone to the AI path. Same thing with Amazon. So my whole point is, you've had this tech rally, but Mag7 right now, penalty box, essentially. I think it significantly outperformed second half of the year. And I think earnings season, as we see in July, and that's going to be a huge validation moment for big tech.
So the Vegas Strip maybe is a decent analogy on the just actuality of it, not in the scale. I mean, we're talking J.P. Morgan expecting $5.5 trillion to spend on CapEx spend for AI heading out to 2030. We're talking about massive numbers that are accelerating, not decelerating. And capacity-constrained companies, right? I mean, some of these companies have said, we can't give you all the compute you're looking for. So how do you see them monetizing without raising prices enough to really trickle into the cost of what everybody is spending on an everyday basis?
Yeah, well, first off, for every dollar spent on, let's say, an NVIDIA chip, there's an $8 to $10 multiplier across the rest of tech. So that's extremely important in terms of what you see in terms of, you talk about some of the single stock moves, just the broadening out what we're seeing in terms of tech. And you could argue for names like Caterpillar and others. But when it comes to hyperscalers, look, it's an arms race. That's why the question is, like, can they actually cut CapEx? They can't. In other words, like, you're diving into the deep end of the pool. Because if they cut back, then they go behind others in line that will clearly go ahead of them. Anthropic, OpenAI, ultimately, as they go public, they'll just have more and more cash. And I think that's the reality right now. And to those, the bears will be like, oh, it's spending to nowhere. It's the opposite. I mean, you're essentially building out a new economy for consumers, enterprises, and for the first time in 30 years, the U.S. is ahead of China when it comes to tech.
That's it for this morning's BizNews Daybreak. I'm Carrie Lanigan. Thanks for listening.
Daybreak on BizNews is proudly brought to you by Bonitas, the medical aid for South Africa.